20th Century Fox. Century Fox presents The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, with narrative description by Audiovision Canada. With Basil Rathbone, Nigel Bruce, Ida Lupino, Alan Marshall, and Terry Kilburn, George Zucco, Henry Stevenson, E.E. Clive. Associate producer, Gene Markey. Screenplay by Edwin Blum and William Drake. Based on the play Sherlock Holmes by William Gillette, with the permission of the executors of the late Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Director of Photography, Leon Shamroy. Art Direction, Richard Day, Hans Peters. Set Decorations, Thomas Little. Sound, W.D. Flick, Roger Heyman. Musical Direction, Cyril J. Mockridge. Directed by Alfred Werker. The first page of a leather-bound book reads, "In all my life I have encountered only one man whom I can truthfully call the very genius of evil, Professor Moriarty. For 11 years he has eluded me. All the rest who opposed him are dead. He is the most dangerous criminal England has ever known." Signed, Sherlock Holmes, 9 May, 1894. In a London courtroom...
Gentlemen of the jury, have you decided on your verdict?
We have.
The prisoner will rise.
A bespectacled, bearded man stands.
Do you find the prisoner guilty or not guilty of willful murder?
According to the evidence, we have no choice but to find the prisoner not guilty. And so do we all find. And may God forgive us.
The packed courtroom stirs.
Prisoner at the bar, you have heard the verdict. Under the law, no other verdict is possible. Yet it is undoubtedly a gross miscarriage of justice. It is deplorable, Professor Moriarty, that a man of your intellectual attainments should be standing in the prisoner's dock charged with the crime of murder. And in setting you free, I cannot in my conscience exonerate you. Let the prisoner be discharged.
Sherlock Holmes bursts into the courtroom and strides up to the judge's bench.
Your Lord, I have important new evidence.
You come too late, Mr. Holmes. The prisoner has been discharged.
But, my lord, you can't let Moriarty go free. He killed Lorraine. I can prove it. I can destroy his alibi.
That alibi has been established by 300 fellows of the Royal Society. Your lordship, my client has been acquitted. He cannot be tried twice on the same charge.
Soon after, as a drenching rain pours from the skies, Holmes encounters Moriarty on the courthouse steps.
Well, there you are, Holmes. I'm afraid you have a bad opinion of me.
On the contrary, I hold you in the highest esteem, but only as a knave.
It's gratifying to know that one's talents are appreciated by such a distinguished connoisseur. May I give you a lift? Cabs are scarce in this rain.
Thank you.
They step toward the street under Moriarty's umbrella.
221 Baker Street, first.
Very good, sir.
After you, my dear Holmes.
By no means. I prefer that you precede me at all times.
What a creature of habit you are.
They climb aboard the hansom cab. On the way to Baker Street...
You've a magnificent brain, Moriarty. I admire it. I admire it so much I'd like to present it pickled in alcohol to the London Medical Society.
That would make an interesting exhibit.
Holmes, you've only now barely missed sending me to the gallows. You're the one man in England clever enough to defeat me. The situation has become impossible.
Have you any suggestions?
I'm going to break you, Holmes. I'm going to bring off right under your nose the most incredible crime of the century, and you'll never suspect it until it's too late. That will be the end of you, Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
And when I've beaten and ruined you, then I can retire in peace.
I'd like to retire. Crime no longer amuses me. I'd like to devote my remaining years to abstract science.
The cab pulls to a halt.
Here we are at my lodgings. I'm so sorry I can't ask you in. Good night, Professor Moriarty. Good night.
Holmes steps down from the cab. Later, in his residence, Moriarty admires an orchid. The delicate plant is one of many exotic species collected in his conservatory. Moriarty closely examines a plant with heart-shaped leaves and touches the soil in its pot. A look of annoyance crosses his hawkish features. He picks up a watering can. Furious, he yanks a bell pull. An elderly butler arrives.
I was just coming in when you rang, sir.
Oh, there you are, Dawes.
Mr. Bassick is here, sir.
I'll see him at once. Come to me as soon as he's gone, Dawes. There's something I want to say to you.
Yes, sir.
Dawes turns away from Moriarty's cold stare. The shadow of a flautist plays on a nearby wall. Moriarty sits at a desk with the ailing potted plant. Dawes enters apprehensively ahead of Bassick, who doffs his top hat as he steps toward Moriarty's desk. The professor doesn't look up from his examination of the plant.
Well, Bassick?
Don't that bloke never stop? That music gives me the creeps.
Does it, Bassick? I rather like it.
He picks up an envelope.
I want you to post that letter in the box at Portland Square just a few minutes before 12. Then drive directly to your lodgings by way of Oxford Circus. Wait there till I send for you. That's all.
First, I want to know what I'm getting into.
You have your orders, that's enough.
I've got a right to know the layout in case there's trouble.
I'll take care of that.
That's what you promised Higgins in that Hammersmith job.
Oh, poor Higgins. They found nothing but his boots.
One boot?
You know, Bassick, Higgins was a valuable man and a clever cracksman. But he had your unfortunate habit of asking too many questions. And now all that's left of him is one boot.
Don't take me wrong, Professor. I'll do what you tell me right enough.
I'm sure you will, Bassick. And just to prove how I trust you, I'm going to tell you my plan, although you haven't the imagination to appreciate its subtlety. My whole success depends upon a peculiarity of Holmes' brain. Its perpetual restlessness. Its constant struggle to escape boredom.
Holmes again?
Always Holmes until the end. He's like a spoiled boy who picks watches to pieces, but loses interest in one toy as soon as he's given another. So I'm presenting the ingenious but fickle Mr. Holmes with two toys.
He quickly sketches on a piece of paper.
The first, that letter. If I know Mr. Holmes, that will interest him very little. After this comes to fascinate and tantalize his imagination.
The sketch depicts a man with a large bird hung around his neck.
That is what I'm depending upon to absorb Mr. Holmes' interest when I'm engaged elsewhere. I'll give him a toy to delight his heart, so full of bizarre complications that he'll forget all about the first toy. That letter.
It's addressed to Sir Ronald Ramsgate, constable at the Tower of London.
What's in the letter, Professor?
The germ of a crime, Bassick. A truly great crime. A crime that will stir the empire. The children will read about in their history books. And you're going to be part of it, Bassick.
Bassick stares at Moriarty, stunned, as the professor shows him to the door.
Off with you now.
Bassick double-checks the address on the envelope, hides it under his hat, and hurries out. Moriarty's attention returns to the plant on his desk. He studies it closely and looks at the watering can as Dawes returns.
You wanted to see me, sir?
I'm away for a few weeks, Dawes, and I come back to find my Anthurium magenta, my incomparable Anthurium magenta, withered, ruined.
I can't understand it, sir. I took good care of all the plants.
Did you water them?
Every day, sir, just as you told me, sir.
Then how does it happen that I find a spider's web spun across the spout of a watering can?
Well, that can happen overnight, sir.
Overnight, huh? Then you didn't water them today.
Well, there's been so much to do, sir, preparing for your coming back and
nothing is as important as the care of my flowers. Through your neglect, this flower has died. You've murdered a flower.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir.
And to think that for merely murdering a man, I was incarcerated for 6 whole weeks in a filthy prison cell.
A pity, sir.
A travesty on justice.
Quite so, sir.
But for this crime, Dawes, you should be flogged, broken on the wheel, drawn and quartered.
Yes, sir. Will that be all, sir?
And boiled in oil.
Thank you, sir.
Go away.
Yes, sir.
As Dawes retreats, Moriarty picks up the pot and carries it to a side table. Where he takes a pair of scissors. He amputates the plant's single bloom, then places it between the pages of a book and closes it. It's entitled Baedeker's London and Its Environs. Later, at Holmes' apartment, several flies have been trapped in an empty wine glass. Plucking his violin, Holmes stares at them intently. Unnoticed, Mrs. Hudson, his landlady, enters and looks at him askance. She crosses the room and exits onto a landing where a boy is sweeping up, wearing a frilly apron over his trousers.
Well, Billy, when you've finished sweeping, you can dust.
Yes, sir.
As Mrs. Hudson goes downstairs, Billy waits for her to go out of sight and kicks the dirt under a carpet. Billy steps to the landing railing and looks downstairs to see who's at the door.
Oh, good morning, Dr. Watson.
Good morning, Mrs. Hudson. Is Mr. Holmes in?
You're right, Doctor.
Ah, good. Is he busy?
Well, you might say he was busy, and then again, you might say he was not busy.
Huh? I'd say he was busy.
When Watson lumbers upstairs, he sees Billy wearing the apron.
Well, 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 Billy. That's a fetching little frock that you're wearing.
Mrs. Hudson made me put it on, sir. I was afraid Mr. Holmes or you would see me.
I think it's very becoming.
Watson knocks on Holmes' door.
Come in, Watson.
Watson enters and sees Holmes staring at the flies in the wine glass.
I trust I don't come in opportunely.
My dear fellow, as if you ever could. Come on, pull up a chair. As a matter of fact, you're just in time to help me decide a matter which is certainly delicate and possibly of the gravest importance.
Of course. Anything I can do.
I received this note last night. My dear Mr. Holmes, I'm taking the liberty of calling on you at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. That's very soon now. To ask you what may appear a silly question, whether or not I should go to a garden party on Saturday at Lady Conningham's. I beg you to see me. I'm in desperate need of advice. Sincerely yours, Anne Brandon. What do you make of it, Watson?
Somebody's pulling your leg.
No. I've checked on the young lady. She lives in town with her brother. She's very rich, mining fortune. Her father died somewhat mysteriously about 10 years ago. As for Miss Brandon's dilemma, Lady Conningham is eminently respectable, but she gives the kind of parties that one comes away from with a feeling that one hasn't been anywhere.
Well, how can you trifle with such inconsequentialities when Moriarty's loose on London?
My dear Watson, you astound me. It's the very inconsequentialities of Miss Brandon's message that engages my interest.
But Moriarty? What of him?
I've taken the most efficient steps of keeping in touch with Moriarty.
You're having him followed?
Oh, don't be so crude, Watson.
Well, what are you doing?
Nothing.
Nothing?
My dear Watson, you needn't check me back as if I were an invoice. I said nothing. That's the best thing I can possibly do at the moment. Moriarty is as curious about my movements as I am about his. So I sit here and wait for him to come to me. And he'll come. Never doubt it.
So you fiddle while Rome burns?
A daring metaphor, Watson.
And what are you doing with that infernal fiddle and those flies?
I was observing the reaction on the common house fly at the chromatic scale.
A brilliant experiment.
Yes, it will be, if I can find the note that annoys the house fly.
Huh?
Then one need only play that one note and pst, all the house flies disappear.
Amazing.
No. Elementary, my dear Watson. Purely elementary.
Watson checks his pocket watch.
I expect that'll be the young lady.
On the contrary, I suggest an elderly gentleman. Perhaps a touch of gout in his right leg.
Holmes sets aside his violin and steps to the door.
Sir Ronald, I'm delighted to see you.
How do you do, Holmes?
Let me take your hat and stick.
Thank you, yes.
I don't think you know Dr. Watson, do you? Watson, this is Sir Ronald Ramsgate, Constable of the Tower of London, where all he has to do is to keep his eyes on the crown jewels.
How do you do, sir? Holmes has often spoken of you, Dr. Watson.
You haven't dropped in like this for a long time, Sir Ronald. Won't you sit down, have a cup of tea?
Thank you, no. I've come to consult you on a rather peculiar matter.
Mm-hmm.
He pulls out Moriarty's letter.
Doesn't it strike you that the handwriting is...
Yes, yes. That's because it's written with the left hand. Star of Delhi will never reach the Tower of London. Curious and anonymous.
What is the Star of Delhi?
Probably the largest emerald in the world. A gift to Her Majesty from the Maharaja of Rapur.
Well, I shouldn't worry about this, Sir Ronald. It's a typical crank letter. Besides, no professional thief would risk stealing so famous an emerald. He can't break it up. He certainly couldn't sell it as it is.
Perhaps not, but in my position of trust, I can't afford to take any chances. I wonder whether you could possibly manage to be on hand when the jewel is delivered.
Now, when will that be?
This weekend. It's coming on the cruiser Invincible.
Well, Sir Ronald, even though I'm convinced that the threat means nothing and that a routine police guard will be quite adequate, you can depend on me.
Thank you. Now I feel sure the jewel will be safe.
Little enough to do for you, Sir Ronald.
When Watson answers the door, a young woman enters hurriedly and slams the door behind her.
Excuse me.
She rushes to a window and peers down into the street, then turns and sees Holmes and Sir Ronald.
I don't know what you must think of me, but I'm sure I was followed here.
You are Miss Brandon?
Yes.
I'm Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, I know.
Let me introduce you to my associate, Dr. Watson.
How do you do?
Sir Ronald Ramsgate.
Mr. Holmes,
I've got what I wanted, so I think I'll be going along. Good day, Miss Brandon. Goodbye, Doctor.
Goodbye, sir.
My hat and stick, Sir Ronald.
Thank you. I'm depending on you.
I'll not fail you.
I'm sure of that.
Goodbye, sir.
Goodbye.
Holmes shuts the door and turns to face Miss Brandon, who looks away sheepishly. Holmes steps to her side.
Yes, Miss Brandon?
Why, I shouldn't have written you as I did, Mr. Holmes, and then burst in this melodramatic way. But I had to see you.
Oh, that doesn't matter, Miss Brandon. There's no more resolutely informal household in all London than mine.
You're very kind.
Not at all. Only I don't understand why you wish to consult me about a garden party. You couldn't possibly find a worse guide to social etiquette.
It's because my brother and Gerald Hunter, he's the family solicitor, insist on my going. And I don't want to. I don't want to.
Yes, but how should I know how to advise you, Miss Brandon?
Perhaps you should do as your brother and family solicitor suggest. Lady Conyngham is eminently respectable.
No. Oh, Mr. Holmes, I'm so frightened.
What are you frightened of, Miss Brandon?
Murder.
Sit down, Miss Brandon.
She sits.
Now, suppose you tell us all about it.
Well, this came from my brother Lloyd in the post 2 days ago.
Holmes takes the paper from her hand. It's Moriarty's drawing with May 11 written beside it. Holmes and Watson exchange puzzled looks. Holmes crosses the room to examine the note through a magnifying glass.
This seems to be a field day for crank messages. Look at that, Watson.
Curious.
May the 11th. That's today.
My father received just such a note before he was murdered.
Murdered?
Murdered. 10 years ago on May the 11th. Scotland Yard couldn't make anything of it. But I saw him. My father, lying there on the pavement with the back of his head off.
When she turns away, overcome, Holmes and Watson trade glances.
Now tell me, Miss Brandon, do you associate May the 11th with anything else besides your father's death? I mean, perhaps with some other incident in your family history?
No, nothing. My family has no history. My father was a self-made man.
I see.
Oh, Mr. Holmes, you must save my brother. Don't let them kill him as they did my father.
Watson opens the door and admits a handsome young man.
Gerald.
The man crosses the room to Miss Brandon.
It was very wrong of you to come here, Anne, after I expressly asked you not to.
No more so than for you to follow me.
Where's the paper you took off my desk?
Here, in my hand. And I'll keep it until I find out what it means.
Gerald turns to Watson and Holmes.
I apologize for the intrusion, gentlemen. My name is Hunter. I'm the legal representative for Miss Brandon's brother. That note was placed confidentially in my keeping. It's of no concern to anybody except Mr. Brandon and myself.
Murder is the concern of every right-minded person, Mr. Hunter.
You make too much of a trifle.
There's nothing trifling about murder. Miss Brandon fears destroying may be a threat.
She's been reading too many novels. It's merely some kind of joke or the work of a mental incompetent.
Isn't it true, Mr. Hunter, that Miss Brandon's father received such a drawing before he was killed?
Since my client attaches no significance to that, Mr. Holmes, I don't see why you should. It's pure coincidence.
Yes. But it would be unfortunate if the coincidence turned into a tragedy, wouldn't it?
That is our responsibility, Mr. Holmes. I regret that you've been troubled. I'll send you a check for your fee.
As yet, there is no fee. I haven't accepted the case.
You see, Anne, you've only made yourself ridiculous.
Well, if Mr. Holmes won't help me, I'll go to Scotland Yard.
Won't you trust me, Anne?
But, Gerald, there's too much at stake. My brother's life.
Darling, you must trust me. If you don't, what's to happen to us?
I don't know, Gerald. I don't think.
I've decided to accept your case, Miss Brandon. I shall help you all I can.
Oh, thank you.
We don't want your interference, Mr. Holmes.
I interfere whenever and wherever I like, Mr. Hunter.
I think you'd better go, Gerald.
Come with me.
No.
Very well, if that's how you want it. Good day, gentlemen.
He stalks out.
Have I been very foolish, Mr. Holmes?
I don't think so. May I keep that note?
Yes, of course.
Holmes tugs on a bell pull and unfolds the note.
Struck me that Mr. Hunter behaved rather curiously.
Yes. It's my fiancé.
I understand that. You've no idea what kind of bird this is supposed to be, have you?
I don't know anything about birds.
I notice that it isn't just a bird. It's a definite kind of bird. I think it belongs to the Procellariform family. I shall go to the Kensington Museum and look him up. I should like you to come with me, Miss Brandon.
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. Anything you say.
Come in, Billy.
Billy enters, wearing a messenger's uniform.
Yes, Mr. Holmes?
Oh, Billy, I'd be obliged if you'd take this young lady down to Mrs. Hudson and give her a cup of tea.
Yes, Mr. Holmes.
Then, Billy, I want you to get me a cab.
I know, sir. Not the first, not the second cab in the line, but the third.
Oh, I don't think that precaution will be necessary in this case, but use your own judgment.
Yes, sir.
And by the way, Billy.
Yes, sir.
When you found that cab, you might remove the dust that you kicked under the rug on the landing.
Surprised and dismayed, Billy turns to Watson, who looks at him sternly.
Billy's starting to take over my duties when I retire, Miss Brandon. I'll join you below in just a few minutes.
I don't know how to thank you, Mr. Holmes.
Please don't try.
As Anne steps toward the door, Billy hurries to open the door for her, and they both leave the room.
Holmes, you can't get involved in this case. Your duty is to guard the Star of Delhi.
What? Oh, bother the Star of Delhi.
What?
Here's a case where a man's life may be involved, and there's something grotesque about this business. Young Hunter knows a great deal more than he proposes to tell. Find out what you can about it, will you, Watson, and report to me at the museum.
It's time for lunch.
Lunch? One can have lunch any time. Oh, go on, Watson. Please, hurry up.
Later, at the Kensington Museum of Natural History, Holmes pulls out a drawer of file cards as Anne looks on.
You're certain there was no one who nursed a grievance against your father or your family?
No, I've told you. My brother and I live very quietly. My father... Well, I admit he was a hard man, but men who go out into new worlds have to be. But he was honorable and fine.
And Mr. Hunter?
We've known each other ever since we were children. My brother and I have always trusted him completely.
Tell me, have you ever, through your family or Mr. Hunter, heard the name of a man called Moriarty?
Moriarty? No.
You quite sure?
Quite. Why do you ask?
Somehow I had the feeling of renewing an old acquaintance. Here we are.
He pulls a card.
Procellariforms, West Wing, Section 4A.
In the meantime, Watson walks along a narrow London street. He steps into a doorway that leads to Gerald Hunter's second floor office and whistles innocently when he sees someone coming downstairs. Watson watches as a man passes him and steps onto the street. Then he hurries upstairs to Hunter's office. He hides when Hunter emerges with Moriarty.
I depend upon you implicitly.
Well, there'll be no difficulties.
As Moriarty leaves, Watson shrinks into a doorway. Watson watches as Moriarty goes downstairs. Then sneaks downstairs after him. On the street, Moriarty boards a waiting cab as Watson looks on. Meanwhile, upstairs, Hunter reads a document. A young man bursts in.
Lloyd, I thought you were asleep.
How can I sleep with this this threat over me. You've got to do something about it, Gerald. Who was that man here just now?
A client.
Who was he?
See here, old man. You mustn't let yourself go like this.
I know. I've been beastly nervy. I haven't slept a wink since that note came.
You've got to sleep. You've got to keep your wits about you.
This is May the 11th. The day on the paper. He's going to kill me, Gerald. Wherever I go, whatever I do, he's going to kill me. Is there nothing anyone can do about it?
Hunter looks at him reflectively, turns, and steps away.
Why don't you go home and go to bed? Can't do yourself any good pacing my office. Now, the safest place in London for you just now is your own home.
Perhaps you're right. Anyhow, I can't go on like this. I'll go home. You come with me, Jerry?
I'm afraid I can't, Lloyd.
Probably wouldn't matter. If anything should happen to me, you look after Anne, won't you?
Don't be absurd. Nothing's going to happen to you.
But if it should...
You know how I feel about Anne.
Goodbye. Thanks.
You'll be all right, Lloyd. This is just a bad dream.
I think I'll walk home. Get some air.
Why not? Nothing can happen to you on a public street.
I hope you're right. Goodbye, Gerald.
Goodbye, old man.
Lloyd leaves the office. Hunter steps to his desk, opens a drawer, and pulls out a revolver. He checks to see it's loaded, puts it in his pocket, and picks up his hat. He listens at the door before exiting. Downstairs, Lloyd warily steps onto the street. At the museum...
See? The beak, the nostrils. The whole formation of the body is the same. In sea lore, the companion of ships and the good omen of honest mariners. But an angel of destruction to those who do him ill. The albatross.
It looks the same. I wonder what it means.
Are you certain that the albatross doesn't suggest some memory, some association with your family? Think.
I am thinking. No, the only thing it reminds me of is the poem. Water, water everywhere. And all the boards did shrink. Water, water everywhere. Nor any drop to drink.
You've hit on it. And instead of the cross... The albatross about my neck was hung. This is no childish prank, Miss Brandon, but a cryptic warning of avenging death. We must go to your brother at once.
Holmes!
Watson rushes in.
Holmes! Come on, Watson, quick! But Holmes, this is important!
Soon after, in a closed carriage, the three careen through London at high speed. Inside...
Well, Watson, you're bursting with news. What is it, man? Speak up! We've no secrets from Miss Brandon.
Moriarty.
I knew it. What have you found out, Watson?
That fellow Hunter is working with Moriarty. They were together in Hunter's office. I watched Moriarty leave.
Excellent. And what did Mr. Hunter do then?
I don't know.
You don't know?
Oh, I came away directly to tell you what I discovered.
Holmes looks away angrily.
Well, have I done something wrong?
I hope not. I particularly wanted Mr. Hunter's movements kept in view today.
Sorry?
Mr. Holmes.
Yes, Miss Brandon?
Regardless of appearances, don't condemn Gerald too quickly. I know he's keeping some secret from me, but he could never do anything vicious, I'm sure of it.
I trust you're right, Miss Brandon, but we must be on our guard.
But I was going to say, Holmes...
Well, what were you about to say, Watson?
Nothing.
Watson?
Yes?
I'm afraid you're an incorrigible bungler.
Seeing his reaction, Holmes pats his shoulder and smiles at him. Watson grins happily. As a thick fog descends, a worker lights a gas street lamp. The carriage speeds past.
Oh, Mr. Holmes, I wish you could go faster.
He's going as fast as he can, my dear.
Meanwhile, as Lloyd walks along a foggy street, he glances around nervously. He passes Bassick. Bassick suddenly ducks into his hansom cab. Hunter passes the cab and follows Lloyd with his hand on the revolver in his pocket. Elsewhere, Holmes' carriage races onward. As night falls, Lloyd walks through the foggy streets. He crosses the street toward a park. Steps behind, Hunter follows with his hand on the gun. Holmes and the others race onward. Glancing around nervously, Lloyd dithers outside the park entrance. Then enters the park and slowly disappears into the fog. People nearby hear the noise. Two policemen rush toward the park. In the carriage...
Will we be in time?
I'm sure we will, Miss Brandon.
The carriage rounds a corner and stops beside the park where a crowd is gathering. Holmes helps Anne down.
He did all right.
Lloyd!
Anne kneels beside her brother's body.
Lloyd!
Gentle hands pull her away. Later, Watson knocks at the Brandons' door while Holmes carries Anne. A policeman answers.
Yes? Oh, Mr. Holmes, can I give you an answer?
No, thank you. I can manage. All right.
As they enter the cavernous marble entrance hall, a housekeeper hurries toward them.
Miss Anne.
Susanna fainted. Take care of her, will you, Watson?
He lowers her onto a couch.
Get me some smelling salts.
Yes, sir.
Where's Inspector Bristol?
In there. I know you ought to go in. He's questioning a witness, and you know the inspector.
Well, I'll take the responsibility.
When Holmes enters an adjoining room, Hunter and the inspector look up.
Oh, it's you, Mr. Holmes. How do you come to be here?
I just happened to be passing. I know the family. How are you, Mr. Hunter? And you, Inspector?
I don't know how much you know about this business, Mr. Holmes, but this time, I'm a little bit ahead of you.
He holds Hunter's revolver.
Then you've already solved the crime?
I found the murderer.
Yes, but that's not quite the same thing, you know.
I didn't kill Lloyd Brandon.
Has anyone said you did?
Oh, it's plain enough what's in the inspector's mind. And he's wrong. While he's wasted time badgering me, the murderer's got away.
Well, if you're so anxious to save my time, supposing you explain how you came to be found bending over the corpse with this in your hand.
He waves the gun.
And him with his head bashed in. Well, if you won't talk, I'm going to hold you on suspicion of murder.
I didn't kill him, I tell you.
You clubbed him to death with the butt end of this revolver from behind.
I wouldn't go too far along that line, Inspector.
And what would you propose that I should do, Mr. Holmes?
Find the murderer.
What? If that man didn't club Lloyd Brandon to death, who did?
Nobody.
What?
Brandon was strangled to death.
Strangled?
Yes. The wounds on the back of his head were administered post-mortem.
Are you sure of that, Miss Rose?
Absolutely. Talk to the medical examiner if you have any doubts.
Flustered, Bristol turns to Hunter.
You wait here.
The inspector leaves the room.
How do you know he was strangled?
The marks were on the neck. Cigarette, Mr. Hunter?
No, thanks.
So that blow on the back of the neck becomes an interesting element. It was unnecessary, therefore vicious. Intelligent criminals are seldom vicious except on special occasions.
Holmes lights a cigarette.
And though the apparent method of the crime was brutal, I'm convinced that the crime itself was intelligently planned.
And Bristol thinks I did that.
The nose of the police dog, although long and efficient, points in only one direction at a time.
What do you mean?
Simply that you're the obvious suspect.
It's so ridiculous. Why should I want to kill him?
You should know that better than anyone else, Mr. Hunter. You're his lawyer, you manage the estate.
Hunter steps toward Holmes.
You'll have to explain that, Mr. Holmes.
The Brandon estate is quite considerable. Miss Anne inherits, and you're about to marry Miss Anne.
Why, you...
I was merely demonstrating how the police mind works. Yes, I'm afraid our friend the inspector has quite set his heart on arresting you.
Arresting me? Well, you mustn't allow them to do that, Mr. Holmes. I must be left free to protect Anne.
From what, Gerald?
Anne has entered the room with Watson.
Answer me.
Hunter goes to her side.
Anne, I'm sorry.
First they murdered my father, and now they've murdered Lloyd. Do they want to kill me too?
I don't know. I don't know anything anymore. I did my best to guard him day and night, yet they found him all the same. There in an empty street.
Oh, I may have lost him for a moment, but I couldn't have been far behind.
Who are they?
Hunter looks away.
Gerald, you're lying. You've been lying all the time. You knew from the first that Nope was a real threat. That's why you tried to send me away, why you followed Lloyd. Oh, Jerry, if you know who killed him, why won't you tell us? Why won't you tell us everything?
Hunter can't meet her gaze.
I'll tell you why. I've been watching you, Mr. Hunter, and I found out
What have you found out, Dr. Watson?
Whatever Watson has found out, you'll know inevitably. I have unbounded confidence in his lack of discretion. Meanwhile, time presses, and we've work to do outside before it gets too late.
Mr. Holmes.
Excuse us.
Holmes hustles Watson out of the room.
You push me out of the room as if I were a child. What am I to make of this, Holmes?
Anything but such a petulant face, old fellow. Come along.
In another moment, I would have made him confess about Moriarty.
That's exactly what I didn't want. If Moriarty's behind this case, Hunter will lead us to him.
Holmes, James. I was just coming to find you, sir.
Have you seen the body?
He was strangled to death, sir. Just as you and I thought. So now I'm going to arrest this fellow Hunter, take him down to the yard. I can really question him there. And I thought perhaps you'd like to come along, sir.
No, I think not, Inspector. Dr. Watson and I are going across the way to take a look at the scene of the crime.
You'll be wasting your time, sir. My men have already covered the ground.
Well, we'll just take a look all the same. Incidentally, Inspector, if I were you, I shouldn't arrest Mr. Hunter. In any case, not now. And I shouldn't question him any further.
Why not?
Well, it won't get us anywhere. He won't talk until he's ready. And anyhow, you haven't a case against him yet. Why not leave him at large? Have him watched and see what happens. For a day or two at least. You've always found my advice pretty sound, haven't you, Inspector? And it's got you a lot of attention in the newspapers.
Then you'll work on the case, sir? In the usual way?
In the usual way, Inspector.
I'll do as you suggest, sir.
Good. Come along, Watson.
Inspector Bristol waits for Holmes and Watson to depart, then approaches the room where Anne remains with Hunter.
Come in.
Oh, Mr. Hunter, we shan't be wanting you any longer. You're free to go whenever you like.
Thank you, Inspector. You see, darling, they don't think anything of the kind. Anne.
He holds her arms.
You must believe.
Anne resists his embrace, then allows him to hold her.
Oh, I don't know what to believe in now that Lloyd's gone. If I can't believe in you, Gerald, there's nothing in the whole world I can believe in or count on.
Dearest.
Suddenly, she stares at him and backs away.
But if you knew Lloyd was in danger, why did you try to keep me from seeing Sherlock Holmes? Why did you follow Lloyd with a revolver in your pocket? Makes me afraid sometimes, even of you.
Darling, how can you say such a thing?
Oh, I don't know what I'm saying. I'm so tired and confused.
Meanwhile, Watson and Holmes survey the murder scene.
All right, Holmes, I found it.
Watson kneels down in the street beside a large X, then lies down on it.
Ready when you are.
As Watson lies in the street, Holmes investigates a flower bed in the park. A pedestrian arrives and stares at Watson.
I say there, has something happened?
Definitely. Would you mind moving back a few paces?
Not at all.
Thank you.
The man backs away, then steps forward again.
Perhaps I can find a doctor.
I'm a doctor. What's the matter with you?
I'm all right. I was thinking of you.
Why?
But aren't you ill?
Certainly not. I'm dead.
The pedestrian is taken aback.
Well, I'm afraid I must be getting on.
Don't let me detain you.
The man hurries off.
Cupid, fellow.
Watson, come here.
Coming home.
Watson picks himself up off the street and goes to Holmes' side.
Look at that, Watson.
What have you found, Holmes? Footprints?
Yes. A club-footed man, about 5'11", I should say, from the length of his stride. Do you observe anything singular about these footprints, Watson?
I can't say that I do.
Club-footed people invariably bring their full weight down on the toe. If you look closely, you'll observe that the weight of the man who made these footprints is normally balanced from toe to heel.
What do you make of that, Holmes?
Oh, just one more unnatural element in this rather peculiar case. The clubfoot must have some other compensating deformity to explain these footprints.
What? You think these are the footprints of a murderer?
It's possible. Yes. Yes, it's quite possible.
What, Holmes?
Well, a man standing just about here would command a view of the path. He might project some kind of weapon.
But no other weapon's been found except Hunter's revolver.
It could easily have been retrieved in the excitement.
But what kind of weapon thrown from here could both strangle a man and crush his skull in?
If we knew that, my dear Watson, we'd be a great deal nearer to the solution of the crime.
When Holmes walks toward a tree, Watson follows. Holmes looks around.
Look at that.
And picks up a twig.
Yes.
He matches it to a nearby branch.
Yes, that was torn from that tree. Perhaps by something hurtling past. The sap's not dry yet. That means it was torn off within the last few hours.
Holmes peers at the ground and bends down.
Ah.
What have you found, Holmes? It's a watch fob. Looks like a rabbit's foot.
No, it's chinchilla. Unquestionably chinchilla.
Well, rabbit or chinchilla, what does it matter?
What? No, perhaps it doesn't matter at all, Watson. We'll see.
I've always thought those things in really poor taste. Fancy going about with a dead animal's foot dangling from your pocket.
Yes, and then losing it at the scene of the murder. Very careless.
At the Brandon mansion, Anne enters a dimly lit room. Staring into the room, she gently closes the door behind her. She slowly advances. Then steadies herself on a chair, gazing across the room with fear and fascination. She approaches her brother's body, which rests under a shroud. Outside, Bassick sits uneasily in the driver's seat of his handsome cab. Inside, Anne buries her face in her brother's shroud. Hearing the flute, she looks up, her cheeks wet with tears. She slowly stands, looking for the source of the music. Walking slowly, she crosses the room. When she arrives at a window, she pulls back the curtain and gazes into the swirling fog. She looks down at the street and sees the flautist playing on the sidewalk beside Bassick and his cab. Holmes and Watson hear Anne scream. The flautist jumps aboard Bassick's cab as it pulls away. Holmes and Watson rush toward the mansion. Anne runs out of the room. Holmes and Watson dash across the street to the Brandon mansion. Soon after, the housekeeper rushes upstairs with the two men.
She's in here, sir.
Who is it?
It's Mr. Holmes.
Anne hurries to open the door.
Mr. Holmes, I'm so glad you're here. This may sound foolish to you, but after Mr. Hunter left, I went up to be with my brother. While I was with him, I heard...
Yes?
The sound of music from the street. Strange music. It didn't begin and didn't end. It just went on and on.
What was it about the music that frightened you?
I heard it once before, Mr. Holmes. Only once, when I was a little girl in South America. The night my father was killed.
It's quite possible that under the circumstances, this impression was a hallucination.
This was no hallucination, Dr. Watson. Take my word for it.
Did you see who was playing?
I went to the window. There was a street beggar standing in front of the house. I could just see the outline of his figure. And then I became so frightened, I screamed
yes,
and...
Yes, I don't wonder.
When she steps away, Holmes and Watson glance at each other. Then Holmes crosses the room to her side.
Do you think you could remember that melody?
Remember it? She'll never forget it as long as I live.
Miss Brandon, I wish I could spare you this, but time is so important.
I understand. What do you want me to do?
It's not going to be easy.
Anything if it'll help you clear up my brother's death.
Do you think you could bear to repeat it for me?
I'll try.
They approach a piano. Anne sits at the keyboard.
Death in every note of it. Mr. Holmes, would you mind going now, please?
Yes, yes, of course. You must try to get some sleep. It's been a terrible day for you.
As Watson and Holmes leave the room, Anne gazes numbly into space. The next day, at Holmes' apartment, Watson reads a newspaper. Watson looks at Holmes, who plucks his violin while Billy shines his shoes.
Thank you, Billy.
Billy picks up his shoe shine gear and spies the furry watch fob on the table beside Holmes.
What's that, Mr. Holmes?
That's a chinchilla foot, Billy.
Chinchilla?
Yeah, you know what a chinchilla is.
Yes, Mr. Holmes. It's a little animal that grows in South America, and its fur is very expensive.
Ah, you should remember that, Billy. It'll save you a lot of money when you grow up.
May I look at it, sir?
Yes, certainly, Billy.
Yeah.
The boy studies it closely.
Well, what do you make of it, Billy?
Blimey, I'd like to have one of these. They must bring you lots of luck.
Well, why do you say that?
Well, I bet in Chile or Bolivia they carry around a chinchilla's foot for good luck, the same as we carry a rabbit's foot.
You hear that, Watson?
My hearing is in no way impaired, thank you.
And you think that the man who lost this comes from Chile or Bolivia?
Yes, sir, because that's the only places chinchillas grow.
There, Watson. What do you say to that for a simple deduction?
I've listened to seashells that made better sense. Why do you waste your time like this, Holmes? Half the women in the world own chinchilla rats.
You exaggerate, Watson, and half the women in the world wish you didn't.
No, Dr. Watson. You see, they make the coats out of skins.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir. And the only place you could get a chinchilla's foot would be where the chinchilla lives.
There, Billy, there's sixpence for you.
Lummy, a tenner. Oh, thank you.
Oh, thank you, Billy, thank you.
Billy hurries out.
I don't know why you let that insufferable little brat come in here.
I was pulling your leg, Watson. Merely relaying to you through Billy certain observations which may or may not coincide significantly with what I found.
You found something?
I think so. I've identified the death music, Watson. The melody Miss Brandon played for us last night. It's an ancient Inca funeral dirge, still used by the Indians in the remote Chilean Andes as a chant for the dead.
What on earth has that got to do with Professor Moriarty? Or the Star of Delhi?
I wouldn't know, Watson. I really wouldn't know. Would you mind?
Inca funeral dirge?
Watson answers the door.
Ah, how do you do, Doctor?
How are you, sir?
Holmes. How lucky to find you at home.
Sir Ronald. Well, won't you sit down?
Oh, here you are, sir.
Thanks.
Sir Ronald sits.
Oh, I hope I'm not interrupting you.
Oh, no.
But I'm very anxious to know. Have you had any idea in connection with that note?
A note? Oh, I'm afraid I haven't had much time to think about it. After all, the Star of Delhi is not an immediate problem.
Oh, but it is. You will help me as you promised, won't you, Holmes? Imagine the scandal if anything should happen to a crown jewel.
Yes. When does it arrive?
Tomorrow night. I've had to arrange for delivery at 10 o'clock. Most inconvenient hour for everyone, of course. But I can't leave the jewel out of the vault overnight, you know. Once it arrives, it's technically in my custody.
Yes. Yes, I understand. What do you want me to do?
Well, could you possibly be at the tower tomorrow night at 10?
Yeah, I'll take care of everything.
Good.
You'll have your own men there, of course, and as an added precaution, I'll see to it that a few policemen are on hand.
Excellent. I can't tell you how grateful I am to you, Holmes.
Not at all, Sir Ronald.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, sir.
You'll forgive me bothering you like this, I'm sure you understand the emergency of the matter.
Certainly, Sir Ronald.
Thank you again. Goodbye, Doctor.
Goodbye, Sir Ronald.
Goodbye.
Sir Ronald leaves the room. Outside, he closes the front door and steps onto the sidewalk. Anne hurries toward him.
How do you do, Miss Brandon?
How do you do? Will you excuse me, please?
As she rushes into Holmes's lodgings, Sir Ronald hails a cab.
Port Authority, Pier 9.
He boards the cab. Bassick is the driver.
Get up.
Inside.
Miss Brandon, is anything wrong?
Two are not enough.
She hands him a note.
They don't even give me time to bury my dead.
Please sit down.
No, I don't want to sit down, thank you.
This is exactly like the drawing your brother received. Only it bears another date. May the 13th, that's tomorrow. Was this left at your door?
Yes, about half an hour ago. I came here directly.
You didn't happen to notice the messenger who left it?
No, one of the servants answered the door. He just took it. He didn't notice anything. Oh, Mr. Holmes, what shall I do?
Isn't May the 13th the night you're supposed to go to Lady Cunningham's party?
Yes,
but... I know Lady Cunningham is irreproachable, but... But there's too much emphasis on this date, May the 13th, whether you should go to the party or whether you shouldn't.
You mean... Gerald?
Miss Brandon, we feel that...
Holmes silences Watson with a look.
Yes.
Mr. Hunter has much to explain, Miss Brandon. But as yet he has not been proved guilty.
But I must know.
You really want to know?
I must. I'll do anything rather than bear this uncertainty, this suspense...
And go to Lady Cunningham's party.
But I can't. Not now. After Lloyd.
I understand your feelings, but you must go to Lady Cunningham's just the same. She's an older woman. She's very fond of you. Now you're alone in a time of trouble. What more natural than that you should go to her?
But she's giving a party. And my brother's...
You'll only have to make an appearance.
Yes, but...
That's what I want, Miss Brandon. I want you to make an appearance. Perhaps take a walk through the grounds. I warn you, it may involve considerable risk. But I think the kind of woman I take you to be would rather risk everything on one venture than live the rest of her life in the shadow of doubt and death. Am I right?
You are right, Mr. Holmes. I'll do as you say. Thank you, and goodbye.
No, this time we'll say au revoir.
She steps toward the door.
Miss Brandon?
Yes?
Quite sure you're not afraid.
Of course I'm afraid, but I'll go through with it.
Good.
Holmes shows her out.
May the 13th. That's tomorrow night. Well, Holmes, you've certainly let yourself in for a busy night tomorrow. What about the Star of Delhi and your promise to Sir Ronald? And what about your duty to the Crown?
All that will be taken care of, never fear. I'm going to delegate the most dependable man I know to guard the Star of Delhi in my place, while I keep an eye on Miss Brandon.
Oh, really? And who may that be?
You, my dear fellow.
Huh?
Watson beams happily. Meanwhile, at Moriarty's house, Dawes shaves off the professor's beard with a straight razor.
You'd like to let that razor slip, wouldn't you, Dawes?
No, sir, by no means, sir.
You're a coward, Dawes. You weren't a coward, you'd have cut my throat long ago.
Why, I give you my word, sir, that thought never entered my mind, sir.
Dawes sponges off Moriarty's clean-shaven face.
And you're worse than a coward, you're a fool. You have as much hatred for me as I have contempt for you.
He snatches a towel from Dawes and dabs his face while looking in a mirror.
Excellent.
Without your beard, sir, you look like your own son.
Smiling thinly, Moriarty leaves the room. And takes a revolver out of a desk drawer. He conceals it under his suit coat.
It's unlikely that I should be back tonight, Dawes. You may as well take the evening off.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dawes.
Dawes watches nervously as Moriarty puts on a top hat and walks out. Bassick is waiting for him as he steps outside into the fog and approaches the cab.
I'm engaged.
Of course you are, Bassick. Why do you think I'm paying you?
I never would have recognized you, Professor.
Moriarty boards the cab. As they pull away, Moriarty taps on a trap door, and Basic opens it.
Yes, sir.
What's to find out, Basic?
Just like you said. They're taking the goods off the boat tonight. The men is waiting.
Excellent. Now let's hurry.
Yes, sir.
Later, an orchestra plays as guests stroll around the garden at Lady Cunningham's party. Anne approaches her hostess.
Hello, darling. Are you feeling all right, my child?
Yes, I think so.
And has that young son of mine been behaving himself?
He's been awfully kind. I'm afraid I'm very tiresome this evening.
Nonsense. No man on the bright side of senility could possibly call you tiresome.
Anne surveys the crowd.
Anne, you're glad you came, aren't you?
Very glad.
Good. You see, I was right. It was quite the best thing for you to do, to come down here. You shouldn't have thought of staying alone in that house so soon after.
Perhaps you're right.
You're going to stay on here over the weekend.
If you want me.
As long as you like, my dear.
Thank you.
Anne peers around nervously.
Has anyone asked for me tonight?
Why, no. Are you expecting someone?
No, I'm not sure. It doesn't matter.
Oh, Mother, may I take Anne away? I want her to see some of this entertainment.
Of course, dear. I hope it will be good.
Sit here, Anne. I want you to see this music hall chap. He may be amusing.
A mustachioed man in a garish striped suit prances into the garden.
Everyone delights to spend their summer holiday down beside the side of the silvery sea. I'm no exception to the rule. In fact, if I'd my way, I'd reside by the side of the silvery sea. But when you're just a common or garden smith or Jones or Brown, at business up in town, you've got to settle down. You save up all the money you can till summer comes around. Then away you go to a spot you know where the cockle shells are found. Oh, I do like to be beside the seaside.
Anne looks nervously around the garden.
Beside the sea.
And smiles weakly at Lady Cunningham's son, Tony.
Where the brass band plays, ding-a-pong. So just let me be beside the seaside. I'll be beside myself with glee. For there's lots of girls beside. I should like to be beside the seaside, beside the sea.
The music hall singer strides away, then returns to receive the crowd's applause.
Funny fellow, isn't he?
Yes.
And I wish there was something I could do. Could I get you an ice?
You're very kind, Tony. I'd like that.
Right. You stay here. I'll see what I can pillage and be straight back.
Thank you.
As Tony hurries off, Anne studies her surroundings suspiciously. The music hall singer peeks out of some bushes nearby.
Good evening, Miss Brandon. Have you been all right?
She glares at him indignantly.
What do you want?
You did have an appointment, you know.
Puzzled, Anne steps toward him.
Mr. Holmes!
He leads her out of sight.
We mustn't be seen together. Has anything happened? Have you seen anything unusual?
No, nothing yet. Mr. Holmes, do you think I could possibly be in danger here?
There's no doubt of it, but don't worry. I'll be watching.
I'll be glad when it's over.
Yes, I know. Don't take any unnecessary risks. Don't talk to strange people, and above all, don't wander far from the lights in the crowd. I must go back. Good luck.
As Anne returns to her place, Holmes ducks into the bushes. Anne's attention is drawn to the orchestra. One of their number, a flautist, stares at her coldly as he plays. Tony returns.
Here we are, Anne.
Oh, thank you. Tony, that's a South American gacha orchestra, isn't it?
Yes, rather good, aren't they?
Yes. Shall we go in? It's rather chilly out here.
Just as you like, Anne.
As they walk toward the house, Anne looks back over her shoulder. At the Tower of London, street lamps cast an eerie glow through the dense fog. Inside...
You're being too hard on Holmes, Ronald.
He gave me his word he'd be here, sir.
You sent me in this place?
You!
Well, sir, I've been with Holmes on a good many cases, and I can assure you might have done considerably worse.
I dare say you might have. Where at least are the policemen he promised to send me?
They'll be here directly. A sergeant and two policemen. Picked men, sir.
A guard enters and salutes Sir Ronald.
What is it, Sergeant?
Police officers to see Dr. Watson, sir.
Bring them in.
About time.
The three policemen enter. The sergeant is Moriarty.
Dr. Watson here?
Yes, I am Dr. Watson.
Sergeant Bullfinch, at your service, sir.
Good evening, sir.
May I see your identification, sir?
I told you, I am Dr. Watson.
I don't doubt that, sir, but the inspector said I was to be particular about identification, sir.
Watson shows Moriarty his identification.
You seem to be a law-abiding citizen. I suppose you'll be wanting to see mine.
Yes, please.
Moriarty obliges.
Everything seems in order, Sir Ronald.
Sir Ronald looks at Moriarty's credentials. Outside, a squad of soldiers marches toward the tower's portcullis gate and the sentry who guards it.
Guard, turn out! Halt! Halt! Advance one!
Captain Mannering, Royal Navy, with escort reporting to Sir Ronald Ramsgate.
Just a moment, sir.
Is that you, Sir Ronald?
Yes. Captain Mannering?
Yes, sir.
Raise the portcullis.
The massive gate is lifted.
Well, here it is, Sir Ronald. The Star of Delhi.
Sir Ronald inspects the huge, glittering emerald.
It's been a great anxiety to me, Captain Mannering. I can't tell you how relieved I shall be when I have this jewel safely locked up in the tower.
Moriarty looks on nearby.
There's no occasion. I have ample protection.
Then I bid you goodbye, Sir Ronald.
Goodbye, Captain Mannering. I'm most grateful to you.
Thank you, sir. Gentlemen.
All right, Captain Wilson.
Guard, about turn! Quick, up!
As the squad departs, Sir Ronald, Watson, and the others follow the tower guards into the ancient stone fortress.
Halt!
Soon after, the party climbs the stairs toward the chamber that houses the crown jewels. A heavy door is opened, revealing a large, ornate wrought iron enclosure.
It's the longest short walk I ever had.
Sir Ronald hands the emerald to Watson.
The crown jewels, gentlemen. The accumulated wealth of 10 centuries of English kings. A grave responsibility. It's not often this door is unlocked, and this is the key to all this treasure.
He unlocks the enclosure and opens the door.
Now!
Suddenly, the lights go out and there's a tussle. Moriarty's two henchmen rush out of the chamber, close the door behind them, and dash downstairs. But the emerald's case is left behind beside the stairs. In the chamber...
The emerald! Where is it?
Tom, I told you, somebody snatched it.
The policemen, where are they?
They're not policemen at all.
What?
After them!
They all race out of the chamber.
Sergeant, there!
As the guards disperse, Watson spots the emerald's case.
Ronald, look!
Watson picks up the case and opens it.
The Star of Delhi. They dropped it.
You see, Sir Ronald? Everything's turned out all right after all.
Small thanks to your brilliant friend Sherlock Holmes. So my fears were ridiculous, and that note was merely the work of a crank. Nobody would steal the Star of Delhi.
No one there, Sir Ronald.
Never mind, Sergeant. I have the jewel.
They return to the jewel chamber.
I've a good mind to give this story to the press. It would put Holmes in his place.
Oh, I wouldn't do that, Sir Ronald. You have got the jewel back.
I have indeed. As safe as the crown jewels of England. But no thanks to Holmes.
Sir Ronald places the emerald among the crown jewels.
Yes, and the capital thing he did. You're a splendid fellow, Watson. You've done me a great service tonight. I shall see to it that your conduct is reported in due course to the proper authorities.
Come along, Sergeant.
As they leave, an officer arrives.
They got away, sir, from the direction of Tower Hill.
But they left what they came for. The emerald is safe.
Oh, good, sir. All right, Sergeant.
The sergeant turns off the lights and leaves with the others. As he closes the chamber door, someone stirs in the jewel enclosure. Moriarty lights a small lamp and shines its beam on the crown jewels. His eyes gleam wolfishly as he surveys the vast treasure. Moriarty hurries to the cage gate and deftly opens the latch. Moriarty shines his light on the jewels and selects a gem-encrusted crown. At the party, the musicians carry their instruments and music stands out of the empty garden.
Goodbye, my
Inside, Lady Cunningham bids farewell to the last of her guests. and turns to Anne.
You're terribly tired, my child, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
You'd better go to bed. I'm going to look in on you later, and if you're not asleep, I shall be very severe.
Anne stares intently across the entrance hall.
Whatever is the matter with you, my dear?
I just noticed the time. A clock on the landing. 11:57. In another 8 minutes, it won't be May the 13th anymore.
You must go to bed at once. You really must. I'll go with you.
I'd like you to. Only, I shouldn't take you away.
Nonsense. They've all gone. Besides, no one misses a middle-aged hostess.
They climb the stairs together.
Have a good rest, my dear, and be sure to sleep late. It's an inviolable custom of the house.
I'll try. Good night.
Good night, my dear.
Anne nervously enters a bedroom. She locks the door behind her. She looks around the room and sits at a dressing table. Still jittery, she removes her gloves. Outside, an intruder with a thick-soled right shoe and a normal left shoe creeps through a flower bed. Inside, Anne takes off her earrings, but freezes when she hears the flute outside. Suddenly, she stands up and strides across the room to a balcony door. She steps out onto the balcony. Tendrils of mist swirl in the garden below. Anne rushes inside, unlocks her door, and encounters the butler on the landing.
Well, he's just coming to find you, Miss Brandon. There's a gentleman on the terrace asking to see you, and he says it's most important.
Mr. Holmes, thank you.
She dashes downstairs and hurries outside into the darkness. When someone lights a cigarette nearby, Anne crosses the garden toward the light. It's Hunter.
Oh. Anne, my dear.
What are you doing here?
Am I so unwelcome, then?
Why did you come?
I've been terribly worried about you, darling. I wanted to be sure you were safe.
Why did you think I might not be safe?
Anne, whatever has come over you?
Don't touch me. Don't touch me.
Surely you're not afraid of me?
As he advances toward her, she backs away.
You are afraid. That's how much all the years have counted. You think I want to hurt you? I don't know why I don't.
Anne runs away from the house into the foggy darkness.
Anne! Wait! Come here, Anne!
Ignoring him, she stumbles through some undergrowth. The intruder knocks Hunter on the head. When he collapses to the ground unconscious, the intruder hurries off. Nearby, Holmes follows a trail with the aid of a flashlight. He crouches beside a set of footprints similar to those he saw in the park. Holmes stands up and looks around the shadowy garden. He dashes off. Meanwhile, Anne rushes headlong through a tangle of bushes and small trees. When she pauses, exhausted, she sees that the intruder is stalking her. Anne runs away from him. As Holmes races through the garden, Watson leads two policemen toward the house.
Come along this way, quick!
Anne runs desperately through the garden. But the intruder follows her relentlessly. Anne looks back over her shoulder at the pursuer as she runs. The man picks up his pace. Anne trips and falls. She gets up and staggers around, exhausted. She stares in horror as her pursuer closes in. It's the flautist from the orchestra. Holmes hears her scream, scowling malevolently. The flautist reaches for a set of bolos at his waist and whirls them over his head. As Anne begins to faint, Holmes lunges forward and tackles her as the killer throws the bolos, which chop the head off a nearby statue. When Holmes pulls a gun, the killer tries to get away, and Holmes shoots him. Watson arrives with the police.
Holmes, are you all right?
Never better, Watson.
And Miss Brandon?
Oh, she'll be all right, poor child. She's fainted. Look after her, will you, Andrews, and take her back to the house.
Very good, Mr. Holmes.
What on earth is this, Holmes?
This, Watson, is a South American bolus. The instrument that killed Lloyd Brandon.
What?
Yes. Come and take a look at his murderer.
Watson checks the injured man's wound.
He's badly hurt.
Can he be moved, Doctor?
Yes.
Then I'll take him to the yard.
Holmes pulls off the man's right shoe and looks at his foot.
Yes, it's just as I suspected. This club-footed shoe was a very clever device, but not quite clever enough, my friend. I'll wager you didn't think of it yourself. Who put you up to it?
The professor. He said he fixed it so I don't get caught.
Professor Moriarty.
See, Moriarty. I killed him.
I scarcely think you'll have the chance now.
So that clears up our case.
Clears it up. We've only just begun. Come along, Watson.
Quick!
Soon after, Holmes and Watson break into Moriarty's house. They move aside some plants and creep into the darkened conservatory through a window. Watson steps into a small pond. He looks down at a lily pad floating beside his leg and lifts his foot out of the pond.
Shh, don't move.
Watson puts his foot back in the pool.
Stay where you are and keep your eyes open.
Holmes steals away cautiously, revolver at the ready. He opens a door to an adjoining hallway. The house is dark. As Holmes hurries up a staircase, Watson swats at a plant dangling beside his head. Hearing someone coming, he balls his fists. It's Holmes hurrying downstairs.
All right, come on, Watson. There's nobody here.
Well, why didn't you say so before?
When Holmes lights a lamp, Watson looks at the pond.
Oh, lily pond.
When they enter the room where Dawes shaved Moriarty, Holmes touches his shaving brush.
It's damp.
Damp, I'm wet through.
He's been shaving. Moriarty's worn that beard for years. Why would he shave it off?
To disguise himself, of course.
Oh, obviously, Watson, but why tonight especially? For what purpose?
Huh?
They return to the conservatory and Moriarty's desk. Holmes checks the drawers, then spots the guidebook on the desktop.
A Baedeker. What would Moriarty be doing with a guidebook? There's London like a cab driver.
He finds the flower and reads the page it marked.
Look, Watson, look.
The town of London. Sergeant Bullfinch.
Moriarty without his beard.
And he stole the emerald.
I wonder exactly what he did do, or rather, is doing.
What do you mean, Holmes?
Don't you see, my dear Watson? Moriarty concocted that Brandon case with all its fantastic convolutions expressly to divert my attention at the time the Star of Delhi was delivered.
So that he could steal the emerald. Well, he didn't get it. We fooled him.
That's exactly the point, Watson. He didn't want the Star of Delhi.
What?
No. The real crime has not yet come to light. He caused a man to be murdered solely in order to distract me. He staged that fiasco at the Tower of London. Why, I don't know, but of one thing I'm certain. It was all done with a purpose. Somewhere in London at this very moment, something tremendous is happening. He said he was going to do it, and he's doing it now. The most stupendous, the most incredible crime of the century. The crowning act of his career. The crowning act. Crowning.
He reads the guide.
St. Edward's Crown. This was the crown stolen from the Tower of London in 1671 by Colonel Blood and his accomplices. The total value of the regalia is estimated at £3 million. Watson, the crown jewels! We're wasting time!
They dash outside. An empty cab stands nearby.
Hi, cabin! Never mind, get in, Watson.
As Watson clambers aboard, Holmes takes the driver's position up top, and they speed away into the fog. Holmes narrowly avoids two pedestrians, then whips the horse to greater speed. Watson bounces around in the passenger's compartment. Meanwhile, at the tower, Moriarty picks up a crown from among the royal jewels. Hearing a noise, he listens suspiciously. Then pries at the gem-encrusted crown with a pair of pliers. Holmes and Watson careen through the foggy streets toward the tower.
I say, steady ahead, drive a little carefully, old boy.
Holmes just keeps whipping the horse. At the tower, a busby-clad sentry stands watch at the portcullis. He hears a carriage approaching at a gallop. It's Holmes and Watson. Suddenly, the carriage topples over.
Holmes, shut up!
Holmes is unhurt. He hides behind the crippled cab.
What is it, Mackenzie?
An accident, Sergeant.
As the portcullis is raised, several guards rush out of the tower toward the cab.
Oh, give me a hand. Get this man out of here.
The guards pull Watson from the wreckage.
Well, what were you trying to do? Batter your way right into the Tower of London?
Of course not.
Holmes slinks away.
Well, I was riding a
cabby.
Oh, yes, it's a cabby.
Well, where is he?
I don't know. I haven't the faintest idea.
Bring him along to the postern room.
What?
Two beefy guards haul Watson toward the tower, but Holmes has arrived before them and sneaks inside. Above, in the chamber, Moriarty hears Holmes' movements and listens. Then continues dismantling the precious stones from their settings. Below, Holmes prowls with his revolver out, looking for Moriarty. He climbs the stairs toward the chamber. Hearing him coming, Moriarty grabs his revolver and blows out his lamp. He creeps across the chamber to the heavy oak door. Moriarty cautiously opens the door and steps out onto the landing. Walks toward the stairs, then looks over the railing and sees Holmes coming up. He shrinks back against a wall, then climbs the staircase as Holmes approaches from below. Moriarty goes up the next few stairs, trying to stay out of sight, but Holmes sees him. Moriarty climbs higher. Holmes watches his progress, then hurries after him. As the two climb higher and higher in the tower, Moriarty tries to keep a massive stone column between himself and Holmes. Arriving at the next landing, Moriarty heads for the next staircase, then changes his mind. Takes cover in a nearby alcove. He watches from hiding as Holmes reaches the landing. When Holmes is turned away, Moriarty squeezes his trigger, but his gun misfires. Holmes hears this and takes cover, but Moriarty shoots the revolver out of his hand. Moriarty chases Holmes higher into the tower. Below, Sir Ronald and others arrive.
Did you hear a shot?
I did, sir. I thought it came from the tower.
Follow me at the double.
Watson leads them upstairs. High above, Holmes races to escape his adversary. He climbs a small set of stairs to a doorway that leads onto the roof. Moriarty follows close behind. Holmes rushes across the roof and scales a wall beside a chimney as Moriarty emerges from below. He listens hard, sampling the misty air for sounds of his quarry. Holmes watches as Moriarty draws near, then climbs into a position just above him. Holmes drops onto Moriarty and grabs his gun hand. The two wrestle for control of the weapon. Holmes holds Moriarty's wrist until he fires the gun. Holmes forces Moriarty to drop the gun, and the two roll over and over each other. As they stand, Holmes knocks his enemy backward with a savage punch and pounces on him. Holmes knocks Moriarty to the edge of the roof. But when he wriggles away, Holmes chases him along the parapet. Holmes hits Moriarty with a mighty blow and knocks him off the tower. Sometime later,
well,
in a restaurant,
Anne Brandon, 21, and Gerald Hunter, 29, were married this morning at the Caxton Hall Register Office. Well, that takes care of that. But I still don't understand how young Hunter became involved in the mystery.
Alfred, may I borrow your violin?
Certainly, Governor.
I said I still don't understand how young Hunter became involved.
Holmes plucks the violin.
Perfectly simple. Whatever Gerald Hunter did was done to protect Miss Brandon.
But I saw him myself closeted with Moriarty.
My dear Watson, I expected even you to see through that trick. Moriarty went to him with a trumped-up lawsuit to put us off the track.
Those flies again.
Watson swats the fly with a newspaper.
Very effective, my dear Watson.
Elementary, my dear Holmes. Elementary.
The end. This described version of The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes was created by Audiovision Canada. The narrative description was written by Peter Agnes, narrated by Steve Coombs, and produced by Valerie Hunter and Marco Sorin. For information on other described movies and audio cinema presentations available from Audiovision Canada, call toll-free 1-800-567-6755. Cast: Sherlock Holmes, Basil Rathbone. Dr. Watson, Nigel Bruce. Anne Brandon, Ida Lupino. Gerald Hunter, Alan Marshall. Billy, Terry Kilburn. Professor Moriarty, George Zuko. Sir Ronald Ramsgate, Henry Stevenson. Inspector Bristol, E.E. Clive. Bassick, Arthur Hole. Mrs. Jameson, May Beattie. Lloyd Brandon, Peter Willis. Mrs. Hudson, Mary Gordon. Justice, Holmes Herbert. Mateo, George Regas. Lady Cunningham, Mary Forbes. Dawes, Frank Dawson. Stranger, William Austin. Tony, Anthony Kemble Cooper.